us since 590 The Fan. KFNS Wood River, St. Louis, a Zobrist Media Station. Welcome back to the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan and 590thefan.com.
Welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Drew Hanlon, who is the trainer for Joel Embiid and Jason Tatum, will join us in about 10 minutes. But we're going to talk some baseball with our friend Rob Raines. Rob, good to be with you. How are you?
I'm good, Frank. Thank you.
I don't know if you heard the opening monologue, but I blame last night's start by Jordan Montgomery on Wilson Contreras. You know, he scarred him early in the season. He's the one who ruined the whole pitching staff. Would you agree with that?
No. No, I mean, it's a crazy thing. I mean, I'm actually going to write a story about it today. I think here's the problem. I think it's this problem this year started a long time ago. And I think what happened, in my opinion, is the Cardinals didn't adequately prepare for what life after Yadier Molina was going to be like. I think that, you know, they don't, you know, maybe they didn't know exactly which year it was going to be, but I mean, they knew it some year that he was going to retire. And I just think they said, okay, when he retires, we'll figure out, you know, who's going to be our catcher. And I just don't think that that worked. I mean, I think they just, you know, they thought they maybe were going to trade for Sean Murphy, and then they found out how much Oakland wanted for him, and they balked at that. So they spun and said, okay, who's the top free agent? They'll just cost us money. Okay, it's Contreras. Let's go sign him. And, it, you know, I just think they didn't. They should have done their homework 2 or 3 years ago and had a transition plan in place, whether it was a younger guy coming up through the system that they liked or trading for another guy back then to be a backup for a year or two if they were determined that, you know, Kisner was not going to be the guy. I mean, how many times do we remember, like, back in December at the end of last year when they said, okay, our number one priority is go out and get a catcher. Well, how did they make Andrew Kisner feel at that point last December? Okay, you know, I thought I was going to be the guy when Yadi left, and now I'm not the guy. And now all of a sudden, here we are in May, and guess what? Kisner's the guy. So
okay.
The whole thing is just a confusing mess.
All right, so let's move ahead, though. Now that it's done, how could they have done this a little bit differently in terms of not such a public embarrassment and not making the organization look so bad? Couldn't they have just not really said much about it, or maybe just said, you know, we're gonna give him a little bit more rest? Couldn't they have, like, camouflaged it instead of going so public and making it so embarrassing?
Yeah, you know, it's a two-edged sword because we kind of talk about all the time about how you don't want, you know, teams to sugarcoat things. You want to be honest and direct. And Ollie has always said that that's the honesty he thinks is the best approach and how he approaches it to the players. But I think there has to be a difference between what you, you know, my own opinion, and I'm saying this as a reporter who likes to get the stories, but to me, there has to be a difference between how a manager talks to his players and how he talks to the media. I just think you can't be, you know, we talked about this with the O'Neal thing, you know, early in the season. Okay, we love the honesty. We love the fact that he was so open and admitted he did that, but I just don't think it was received well. A, number one in the public, or B, number one in the club, number two in the clubhouse. And I think the same thing with this. I do think it could have been handled much, much differently. Even if they wanted to do this, and even if they thought there was a problem with Contreras catching they needed to work on, I think you could have figured out a way to say, you know, he's got a small ankle injury, he's going to take some time off. You know, I mean, and I'm not saying you're lying about it, but I think you just can kind of dance around it and instead of coming out and just burying the guy and throwing him under the bus.
So I've generally been a big supporter of Jack Flaherty. I like him a lot. He's had some bad moments after games with the media. Not terrible, but it's okay, like, if Chris Carpenter did that because he's like a star. It was probably okay if Bob Gibson did it because he's Bob Gibson. But when you're struggling like him, the humility gene has got to come out. And here's my overall question. Rob, do you think, like, a couple years from now, or maybe even by the end of this season, we're going to be saying, you know, Jack Flaherty's just a guy? I mean, I was hopeful that he could be a lead again, but he's a good pitcher, but maybe in the end, he's not better than Jason Marquis.
Yeah, I still aren't ready to go there yet. I still think he has more talent than that. I mean, I know, I guess I'm hanging on to the way he pitched in the first 2 months of 21 and how he pitched the second half of 19, and I know that's a long time ago. But to me, he's not old. I mean, he's still a young pitcher. And I mean, we've seen guys that, you know, had injuries that took different times and different lengths of time. Maybe he's still not 100% healthy. I'm not making an excuse for him, but I think, you know, there may be some reasons. And I think probably, you know, his frustration at what's going on, it's got to be tied to the fact that, you know, he really needs a good season this year to do what he wants to do, which was to say in St. Louis or go somewhere else and make a lot of money, you know, and it's because this is his free agent year. So he realizes that every time he doesn't pitch well, that somebody's going to look at that and say, well, you know, I don't know if we want to sign him for that kind of money. So I think it's a personal thing. I think he wants the team to win too, but I also think he's pitching for that contract. And sometimes that's hard. Sometimes that's, you know, you got to try to block all that out and just worry about that when the time comes and not try to worry about that during the season. And I'm not saying that's what he's doing because we haven't had that conversation and talked about it, but it, to me, it would be human nature probably really to be that way.
Boy, doesn't it seem like a foregone conclusion that this is his last year? Like kind of a gut feel, the way it's trending here.
Yeah, I don't know. Because, I mean, I think you have to look at the fact of who would this team have. You know, right now they have two starting pitchers under contract for next season. I know they have more guys coming in the minor leagues, but you got Mats and you got Michaels. So you're going to have three more starters from somewhere. And you know, I know, okay, everybody thinks Liberatore will be one of them. Graceffa might be another one. They got Thompson, you know, hopefully transitioning to be a starter. So they've got some guys there. But and we all talked about how that all winter this Cardinals didn't do enough to build up this pitching staff. And right now you're looking at a 2024 rotation that would be even, you know, not as good as this one. So, you know, is Flaherty better than some of the other guys out there? I mean, Aaron Nola is going to be a free agent. He's going to cost a lot of money, and I wouldn't be surprised if he has a deal with Philadelphia before he even hits free agency. So I'm not ready to say it's going to be the end of Jack Flaherty yet.
Yeah, and I'm not ready to say he's not going to be a really good pitcher. I think he's going to be fine. But does that the hot topic from the other night, the fastball when he was throwing it 90 miles an hour and Dansby Swanson hit it a long way, is that troubling at all?
Well, it's troubling to me that they throw fastballs to Dansby Swanson. I don't care what the velocity is because the guy can hit a fastball.
Yeah.
And we've established that for years now. So that's the first problem that they've got. You know, whether no matter what's 90 or 95 or whatever, you know. But I think, to me, that's where, again, a pitcher has to take more ownership of what he's throwing. I mean, that goes back to the Contreras thing. I mean, it's easier now. Well, there's two things. Number one, it's harder now in the pitch clock era to shake off a catcher. Because you just don't have that much time, unless you're getting the signal really early in the count. So if the catcher's calling a pitch that the pitcher doesn't want to throw, and he tries to shake him off, it's going to be a problem because of the timing involved. But the second thing is, because of the pitch comp, I really think that the pitchers, especially the veteran guys who have some established careers and you know pedigrees in the league, they ought to be calling their own pitches. If they don't like the way the catcher's calling the game, let them call their own game. Let them make the speed of signal and call the pitch. So. You know, I don't know. Again, we're not involved in the meetings. We're not there in the clubhouse. I don't know if that's something that's been discussed or brought up, or if it's actually happening with some of the guys. I'm not sure, but to me, I still think the blame onus for almost everything that's happened with the pitching staff this year, to me, it falls more on the pitchers than it does on the catchers.
Yes, well stated. I'm wondering. I haven't looked like in the dugout real closely, but is this the way it's working during this period that Wilson Contreras is with the pitching coach, Dusty Blake, and with the manager, and they're sitting close to each other, and they're going over things during the course of the game, and would you anticipate Contreras back behind the plate in a couple of weeks?
The first part of your question is I'm not sure, because we only, when the games are out of town, you know, we're not there, the only shots we get are whatever they show in the dugout. We can't watch the dugout, you know, the rest of the time the camera's on something else. So I have seen him in the pictures at some point, but how much time he's actually spending next to those guys, you know, when their pitcher's on the mound, I'm not 100% sure of. I was out of town last weekend, so I didn't see those couple of games on Saturday and Sunday here, too. So it's hard for me to comment on that. But that was what they said the plan was going to be, was that he was going to sit there. And you know, not necessarily even as much as during the game, as there's some of the meetings beforehand and can evaluate afterwards and stuff like that. So I'm sure that he's doing what they're asking him to do as far as, you know, trying to see what maybe areas that they could improve on. And I do think you'll see him back behind the plate at some point. I don't know when. But, well, for one thing, I mean, Kisner can't catch every day. So you're going to have to find some games that you think he could catch with him. Maybe he'll end up being one of those situations like, you know, Kisner in the past pretty much caught Michaelis, you know. So maybe he'll try to find a guy, whether it's Wainwright or somebody else that can call his own game, that you can pair him with Contreras. You know, I think there'll be some situations where he will be back behind the plate.
If Nolan Gorman is arguably your best offensive player, or right behind Paul Goldschmidt, do you think you have to get him some at-bats against lefties?
Yes.
Yeah. How much longer do you think they can do this? I know they got to keep the right-handed hitters relatively sharp, but if this guy is your best and you're trying to develop him, you're not going to just play him against, you know, right-handed pitching.
Yeah, and the interesting thing to me, and I've had this conversation with other people before, is you're looking at a team right now that's 13-25. Okay, they're 12 games under 500. It's their worst start, actually, statistically, since 1907. Now, I'm not saying that they're going to, you know, finish, you know, 12 games under 500, but right now, you know, to me, the one of the things you can take away from this year is find out about some of these young guys. You know, that's again why I was kind of against the Jordan Walker demotion. You know, this would have been an opportunity to, you're not necessarily, you know, giving away the season, but it's a fine to try to find out about some of these guys. And that would be why I would put Gorman in that category about, you know, what he can do against left-handed pitchers. I mean, I know he's struggled a little bit against it, but it's probably because he doesn't have a lot of experience against him. And as comfortable as he is at the plate right now against right-handers, I'd give him a shot against the left-handers to see what he could do.
So is your best case with Paul DeJong in a, let's just say the team is not going to contend, is for him to continue just to hit really well, and he could yield a nice chip at the trade deadline because Mason Wynn should be here next year? Or how do you see that?
Yes, that's how I see it. I mean, he's got an option. If he plays the way that he played in 2019 and the way he's capable of playing before all this, you know, trouble started, he's worth the contract that he signed, you know, a few years ago. So, I think a team would want to take that chance that if they see, you know, by the deadline, too, you're going to have, well, if he continues to play, you know, as much as he's playing now, he'll have basically 3 months of, you know, a little over 3 months of a track record here to call on. So it's not going to be, it's still relatively a short sample size, but not as short as like 2 or 3 weeks. So I think that would be something that a team would take a look at. Now, you won't get a ton of value in return because of the fact it would be a rental, you know, because they would then have to decide if they're going to pick up the option, unless they pick up the option at the time they make the trade. So I'd be couching what you think you'd get in return for him. You could get, I think, a prospect or something, but I don't think it would be an overwhelming deal.
Only 40 at-bats for Jordan Walker in Memphis. He's hitting 175. What are your people telling you? What have you seen?
Yeah, I haven't been down there yet to see him in person, but I do know he struggled a little bit with the transition. And I think it's probably one of those things where he's trying to do, you know, what they wanted him to do. I mean, what they sent him down there to work at was just basically try to change his swing and get more loft on the ball. And I'm sure that that's part of the reason why he hasn't gotten the number of hits and hit for the average that you would probably expect him to do. And I just don't understand that whole thing either, because to me, you know, one thing I've always been taught about young players, and last time I looked, 20 years old was still a young player. I don't care what level of league you're playing in. You can still be in A-ball at 20 years old and be a young player. The people who are, you know, in charge of player development, and specifically the people in charge of player development with the Cardinals, always have said that the power is the last skill to come. That the last thing that a player learns to do as he progresses as a hitter is to hit for power. So I'm not ready to say that Jordan Walker is not going to hit for power when he's 22, 23, 24 years old. And for him to try to change his swing at 20 to do that now, I just think it's a mistake. So we'll see how it works out.
Good stuff, Rob. We greatly appreciate your time. He's the best follow on Twitter after every Cardinal game, Rob Raines. Rob, we appreciate it, sir. Thank you.
Anytime, Frank. Thank you.
All right. We'll take a short time out. We're talking hoops with Drew Hanlon when we come back.
Hey, join the show, 855-282-8255.